Hey, before we get to the show, I wanted to remind you to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/curbsiders. If you haven't signed up yet, sign up now to get ad-free episodes, twice monthly bonus episodes, and a whole bunch of other cool stuff at patreon.com/curbsiders. Paul, I want to just apologize to you and the audience up front for what I'm about to do.
I'm stoked. All right.
Why was the dietitian kicked out of the casino?
I'm not going to get it.
She was counting carbs.
Shoot, I knew it was carbs too. So we talked about scurvy in this episode, Matt. Have I done my, I feel like I've done the pirate joke before, but I'll do it one more time just in case I have.
Yeah, let's do it.
What is a pirate's favorite letter?
I'm going to let you say it, Paul. I don't know, Paul. What is it?
Okay, no, go ahead and guess.
Is it R?
You'd think it'd be R, but it'd be the C that he loves. So thank you for setting me up.
The Curbsiders podcast is for entertainment, education, and information purposes only, and the topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases or conditions. Furthermore, the views and statements expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and should not be interpreted to reflect official policy or position of any entity, aside from possibly Cash Like More Hospital and affiliate outreach programs, if indeed there are any. In fact, there are none. Pretty much, we aren't responsible if you screw up. You should always do your own homework and let us know when we're wrong.
Welcome back to the Curbsiders. I'm Dr. Matthew Frank Watto, here with my great friend, amateur film critic, and America's primary care physician, Dr. Paul Nelson Williams. Hey, Paul.
I'm drowning in shame after my joke, but hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. Paul, this was a real treat for me, this one, because I graduated from Boston University twice, I guess you could say. But I was in Sargent College of Health and Rehabilitation, and our guest, Dr. Joan Salgi-Blake, is a professor of nutrition there, and she is a delight. And we are talking about nutrition. It's been a long time since we did a nutrition episode. We talk a lot about, like, you know, we asked her a lot of questions about, like, the popular stuff that's out there, some of the misinformation that's out there. It's a really great episode, so I think people are going to enjoy it. But Paul, tell people, like, what is it that we do on Curbsiders? Why are we here?
I wondered if we were getting there. But Matt, we are the internal medicine podcast. We use expert interviews to bring you clinical pearls and practice-changing knowledge. As you mentioned, tonight we talked to Dr. Joan Salgi-Blake, who is a clinical professor at the programs of nutrition at Sargent College of Health and Rehabilitation Services. As you mentioned, she earned her bachelor's in food nutrition at Montclair State University, her master's in clinical nutrition at Boston University, did a dietetic internship at the New England Deaconess Hospital, and got her a doctor's of education at Boston University School of Education. Tonight, we learned just a lot of her recommendations about how she talks to patients about the various diets that are out there. So we talked about the keto diet and the paleo diet and how to talk people through vegetarian and veganism and sort of kind of all the big hits, and of course all my TikTok obsessions as well. I should also mention that Dr. Salgi-Blake has her very own podcast that I think Matt listened to a bunch of episodes for and found it very helpful for this. That's called Spot On, which can be found on all platforms. So without further ado, why don't we get to it?
And a reminder that this and most episodes are available for CME credit through VCU Health at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. You can also sign up to receive CME through Curbsiders at patreon.com/curbsiders. Okay, Joan. Well, I'm really excited to have you here. As I told you, I've been listening to a lot of your podcast episodes, so I want the audience to do that as well, the Spot On podcast. But they want to know, and I want to know, what are you doing outside of medicine? Like, what are your hobbies or interests right now that you're really enjoying?
Right. So outside of nutrition and medicine, how I relax, enjoy myself is I shop. Based on my accent, you're going to realize I'm from New Jersey. And in New Jersey, shopping is like an Olympic sport. So, I mean, I could calculate 20% off before I could speak English. So that's how I relax.
That is fantastic.
So as a native New Jerseyan, I'm going to follow up here. Have you transitioned fully to online shopping? Or are you still going to physical locations? I know the mall was a part of my childhood. I don't know. So, like, what does your shopping look like these days? How has this evolved over time?
Paul, we need to go and touch. We can't. I do online.
This is what I was hoping you'd say. I love this.
Yeah. I do online for detergent. Okay.
Sure.
But Paul, We need to touch. And I want to tell you something. I, in my town that I live in, there's a TJ Maxx.
Oh, sure.
And when I die, my ashes are going to be spread over TJ Maxx because it is ridiculous. Okay.
It's that's like cheers for you. You walk in, they're like, Joan. Yeah.
That's exactly it. Okay. Come, new sale. Okay. And then I go.
All right. Paul, was that your question or do you want to? Do you have any other follow-up questions?
I mean, I guess I can ask my typical, do you have any advice or feedback that you'd like to give your learners that you've accumulated over time?
Yes. My favorite is nutrition is a science and not an opinion.
Yeah. I think we get a lot of opinions. That might be part of the problem with nutrition at this point.
This is called job security for me, Matt, because everybody has an opinion because they all eat. But nutrition is a science, as medicine is a science. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make sure what's out there is accurate and correct the misinformation, and more importantly, correct the disinformation, which is challenging.
Yeah. So the misinformation is people just saying things that are wrong just because they're not informed, and disinformation is where people are like almost on purpose, like trying to muddy the waters.
Matt, the difference is intent. Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example of this. Okay, so misinformation would be an apple is a good source of protein. Now, we all know that that's misinformation. Disinformation would be don't eat apples from ABC Orchard because they're going to give you cancer. That's intent.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna set the record straight on a lot of things here. Paul, would you read the first case, and then let's get into this discussion here. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, some great names in these cases, too, so I just want to call these out as we go. So we're going to start with Bree. Bree is a 50-year-old female. She has type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. She comes to our primary care office with her husband, Kobe, to talk about her diet. She has been doing some reading online, and she'd like your opinion on the possible benefits of a low-carbohydrate, ketogenic, and low-fat diets because of her diabetes and high cholesterol. She says she doesn't really understand what a keto diet is, so she is seeking our expertise, and Joan, yours in particular. So we always like to start sort of simple and then kind of get granular. So just starting broadly, how would you explain to Joan what a ketogenic diet is and how carbohydrates and fat play a role as part of it?
Okay, first thing I want to tell you as medical physicians that when they walk into your office and they need nutrition advice, let's hope you have a registered dietitian nutritionist on staff to give you science-based information that is spot on. That is really, really important. Because I know, Matt, and I know, Paul, you studied hard through medical school. I know you did, but your amount of nutrition that you probably got in medical school was Okay, so let's go with someone who has been trained to give you the latest science, and that's a registered dietitian nutritionist. Okay, keto diet. Oh, my goodness gracious. Keto diet is a high-fat, very low-carbohydrate nutrition pattern that, you know, was designed originally to help people with epilepsy and has done quite well. But I want to tell you, to stay in keto, to stay adhere to that diet is extremely challenging. We're talking about, you know, 55 to 60% of your calories coming from fat, 30 to 35 from protein, and a little bit from carbohydrates. Well, that's really hard to adhere to and still have a healthy diet. Okay. So you're going to, you know, again, someone that has epilepsy, they can work with a dietitian to get that done. But for the Joe and Josephine on the street, it's not the best diet for someone who has high cholesterol. Think about that. If you're having that much fat and you're having that much protein, the saturated fat, the heart healthy unsaturated fat is probably going to be very high in the diet, and that's not good. We know a diet high in saturated fat will increase that bad LDL cholesterol, so we don't want to do that. And also it's going to be very high in dietary cholesterol. What we want to be looking at is more of a diet that is rich in plant, it's more plant forward. Okay, I love plant forward because more fruits, more vegetables, more whole grains, great lean protein sources, healthy oils, and some lean dairy. And that's what you're going to want best for trying to get your cholesterol down and get your blood pressure down.
Yeah, you mentioned heart unhealthy saturated fat. I think part of what's out there now is people think fat doesn't matter, cholesterol doesn't matter, and it seems to be the overwhelming amount of evidence is that it does matter, and most doctors believe that, but there are a couple people kind of on the fringes, and I think what makes the keto diet so sexy is the visual results, the weight loss can happen so rapidly, and you know, if people do have diabetes because they're eating so low carb, you know, the blood sugar, the blood pressure, that sort of thing gets fixed. But I think the adherence thing, like you said, is a problem. And I'm still worried about the long term, like what's going to happen, especially for people whose LDL shoots through the roof when they're on right. these diets.
Right. Okay. So you can do any crazy diet for a short term, but we're looking for the long term.
Right.
Anytime that you eliminate food groups, mm-hmm. grains, whatever, you're going to lose weight because you're just eating less variety of foods. The weight loss will be great initially, but what are we doing long term? And you know something, it's not just about getting a heart healthy diet to reduce your risk of hyperlipidemia or high cholesterol. I'm talking longevity here. Okay, so let's look at a diet that is going to help you to lower your cholesterol and give you the right kind of carbohydrates that's going to help you to live a long and beautiful life. And that's what we want to do. These fad diets, nothing is new. You're probably not old enough, but you remember Dr. Atkins?
Well, yes, actually,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, so now you're really older than I thought you were. Okay, fine. Okay. So this Dr. Atkins was the same thing. Very low carbohydrates, you know, high protein, high fat. This is nothing new. It's like fashion. Bell bottoms were in the 70s. Bell bottoms are not back in vogue here. Okay. So this stuff all is the same stuff that gets recycled. What we know from research, which is unbelievable, is that a diet that is more high in fiber, fruits and vegetables, special type of fiber, soluble fiber, which is oats and beans and citrus fruits, as well as lean proteins, a lot of fish, healthy oils such as olive oil, and you know, small amounts of lean meat, it's good for you. And my goodness, I think we should just go sail to the Mediterranean.
Hey, I'm down. I've been there before, and it's lovely. Paul, have you been to the Mediterranean yet?
No, not yet. Not yet. On my list.
Then, okay. All the more reason.
Paul, okay, we're going to talk because at Boston University, I teach a course in Italy every June. Okay, Paul, you're coming, okay?
Absolutely.
You're coming, Paul. I'm a tough grader, so I'm not going to go easy with you. But oh. I teach this course.
I'm a type A lunatic. It's going to be fine. This is going to work out great.
Okay. And then shopping in Italy. Hello. Okay, so what we do is we bring BU students and students outside of Boston University to go there and really immerse themselves in the Mediterranean diet and lifestyle. So Paul and Matt, it's a lifestyle. And so they get and they understand this and it's healthy and people walk. It's a whole unbelievable life-changing experience. So when I see these kind of like keto diets that's so extreme, when I know the science for the Mediterranean is so strong that you're eating a healthy diet with a lot of fruits and vegetables and grains, mostly whole grains, and really being able to lower your risk for heart disease. And guess what? We know that fruits and vegetables can help lower high blood pressure. Look at the DASH diet. We know DASH diet was dietary approaches to stop hypertension. And again, rich in fruits and vegetables, rich in whole grains, some fish, a lot of nuts and beans. So we know that this pattern is healthy for your heart, healthy for your high blood pressure. So the question is, why are we going to the extreme of a keto diet, which is unbelievably challenging to follow?
So I'm not going to be as compelling or convincing as you. So a patient comes to see me, they're excited about the keto diet. They've seen it work well with their friends. We're all about harm reduction here. Is this someone for whom you would think about like having a conversation about fiber supplementation? Like if you're going to do it, like is there concern for micronutrient deficiencies? Is there anything that you would sort of advise for someone who does pursue this diet, yet even sort of against your recommendations? Is there a way we can sort of minimize the harms of it?
Right. It is so strict and so limiting that unless you're working with a registered dietitian nutritionist, there is bound to be lapses in vitamins and minerals. I'm just telling you this right now.
Yeah.
So this is not something that Joe and Josephine on the street should just go and read about and try to do. This is something that needs to be tailored if your medical history warrants it. But not to lose weight, not to lower your cholesterol. You don't go to this extreme to do that. So if you're going to follow this, you have to say as a physician, okay, if you want to follow this, what your goals are, but let me hook you up with a registered dietitian that let's figure out if A, this is the best diet for you based upon the medicines you're taking and your history. And if you still want to do it, then you get the best guidance to do it as healthfully as possible. But I'm going to tell you, a true keto diet is unbelievably challenging to follow.
This episode is brought to you by Figs. Here at the Curbsiders, we are always talking about the latest medical breakthroughs. But if I'm being honest, there is one thing we weren't seeing any major advancements in, and that's medical scrubs. The scrubs I used to wear back when I was a resident were stiff and itchy and boxy. They literally came out of a vending machine. They definitely did not fit right. And then 5 years ago, I noticed a change in my colleagues who wear scrubs. I noticed that they started to look comfortable and actually good. And that's probably because of Figs. Figs are made for all of us in healthcare. They are lightweight, breathable, antimicrobial, and oh yeah, they have pockets for your stethoscope, your pager, that parking ticket you forgot to validate, all of it. Watto tells me he now owns 5 pairs and he doesn't wear anything else. I don't know why he tells me these things. I think maybe we've just run out of things to talk about. But nevertheless, when Watto's wearing scrubs, he's wearing Figs. And we have teamed up with Figs. Now Curbsiders listeners can get 15% off. Just go to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX for 15% off. This episode is brought to you by UpToDate. With clinical information and guidelines constantly changing, it can be difficult to stay current and manage patient care while keeping up with CME requirements. With UpToDate and Expert AI, you can seamlessly earn CME while researching clinical questions. And with UpToDate Pro Plus, meeting your state requirements is easier than ever. New state tagged topics show you what content counts towards mandatory credits. Physicians continue to choose UpToDate for evidence-based, AI-powered decision support that makes CME a seamless part of their workflow. Subscribe to UpToDate or UpToDate Pro Plus for expert-authored, evidence-based clinical recommendations and streamlined CME. For a limited time, get 10% off UpToDate packages with code CURB10. Again, that's CURB10. Visit store.uptodate.com to save on your annual or longer personal UpToDate subscription today and get expert-authored clinical recommendations and easier CME into your daily practice. Visit www.uptodate.com/CME for CME details. Physicians may need to self-report credits per state board requirements. UpToDate Expert AI and UpToDate Pro Plus are not available in all regions. Applicable taxes may apply. Proof of status is required for all trainee and student orders.
I wanted to ask, among dietitians, outside of treating kids with epilepsy or people with epilepsy, is there the same controversy that it seems to exist just among the general public that some dietitians think like fats are good or carnivore diet is good, everyone should be on that? I haven't met that person yet, but I'm just asking if there's controversy in the field, or do most people more or less agree with what you're saying, which is what most doctors also kind of believe, like Mediterranean DASH, like eat a lot of like, you know, healthy whole foods. What do you think?
Okay, so what we know is, and I think what's coming out right now, Matt, that's a great question. We have something coming out from the NIH called personalized nutrition or precision nutrition. These studies are coming out. And what we know is that nutrition, just like medicine, is very individualized. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're going to find out more as life goes on here that you may be a person that may want to tailor your carbohydrates or increase your healthy fats. Okay. So what's coming down the pike here is personalization. And that's when you need to meet with a registered dietitian, nutritionist. What we know now is based on studies through you know, long-term studies that know on a population basis that the DASH diet lowers high blood pressure. The Mediterranean diet will help with heart health. There's going to be tweaks coming down there. So there, as this research evolves, you may get tweaking.
Right.
You know, right. But the big science that we have, you know, based upon is that a more balanced diet that is plant forward, low in saturated fat, high in fiber. We can get into the types of fiber in a minute, and some fish going out there, and healthy oils and lean dairy. Man, the science is pretty strong for that.
I like what you said there, and how I would counsel our listeners, and this is what I do, if someone wants to try or follow a diet, because there is something called a lean mass hyperresponder to these high fat diets like carnivore, keto, where their lipids go like through the roof. I'm talking total cholesterol, 500, 600, LDL in the 200s, 300s. With those, I just tell people that could happen. You know, if you're going to try to follow this keto diet, 20 to 50 grams of carbs or less per day, you know, we're really going to have to follow all your markers closely. How do you feel? How do your labs and blood work look? And, you know, if there's any problems, and we'll see if it works for you. And then I just tell them the uncertainty about what it's doing to your arteries if it's raising your cholesterol. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I like what you said about personalized medicine. Maybe we'll get more sophisticated on the individual level going forward.
You know, I love what you just said, Matt, because, you know, this is a team approach, where you got a dietitian, you got a doctor, you got a patient. And we want the patient to be happy and help them meet their medical goals. But somebody's got to be watching this. So, you know, look, and I love the fact you say, okay, if you want to do this, let me tell you the pros, cons, blah, blah, blah. But we're going to monitor this. And if we see something like these LDL, bad cholesterol shoots up, we got to make a change. I mean, we can't keep doing this. So I think that's the problem. The problem, Matt, is that people go off and do these things without you.
Right. Yeah. I get it. Well, you mentioned you were going to talk about fiber. Now,
yes.
Paul, have you ever heard of the term fiber maxing? I know Joan has because I learned it from her show.
No, I have not. But
can
I guess
you guess
of all the
what fiber maxing is, Paul? I know you're online, Paul, so you can guess what it is.
I'm shocked that I've not actually come across it yet. But of all the maxing, it's probably the healthiest of them. But I would love to hear more.
Okay.
At least when I hang your face with hammers. Like, this still seems like probably an improvement over looks maxing, say.
So, fiber maxing. Okay. You know, it's funny. We have been trying forever to get people to eat more fiber in the diet. And now through social media and TikTok, now we have fiber maxing. And we're like, oh, this is great that fiber's in the limelight, but wait a minute, there's not that much that quickly. This is cooking dynamite, you know? Okay, so let's rewind here. So fiber, believe it or not, is a nutrient that is actually pretty much not absorbed by the body because you don't have the enzyme to break it down. So what fiber does is it's like a broom, okay? It's like a broom that sweeps through your GI tract to keep things moving. So it helps with constipation. It's not a sexy problem, but it is a big problem among Americans, constipation. Of course, constipation can lead to diverticulitis, diverticulosis. And so what this fiber does is keep you actually regular and keep things moving. Now, there are certain types of fiber. There's insoluble fiber and soluble fiber. Insoluble is insoluble in water, and soluble is. Okay, so what the soluble fiber is, this is more of a gummy, viscous fiber. And you can find it in oats. You can find it in beans. You can find it in citrus fruits, apples, and pears. So this type of fiber can help lower your blood cholesterol levels. But wait a minute, Paul, Matt, I just said you don't absorb it. So how would this, think about this.
You're going to tell us.
I love this. So how the heck does this fiber, who never gets absorbed, majority doesn't get broken down, lower your cholesterol? Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
So the soluble fiber, what will happen is in the GI tract, you have bile acids that go off that help you absorb and digest fat with a meal, and also dietary cholesterol. Bile acids are full, have cholesterol as part of the bile acids. Typically, when you eat something, fatty meal, your bile acids will help with the emulsification so you can break down the fat and absorb it. But the body is very, very strategic, so they reabsorb the bile acids. Okay. What happens with soluble fiber? Ready? So the soluble fiber, the viscous fiber, latches on to the bile acids and dietary cholesterol and takes it with it in your stool.
How elegant.
How elegant, okay? That poop is good. Okay, so what happens is the bile acids don't get reabsorbed. And the liver says, I got to make bile acids. So the liver will take the dietary cholesterol from the blood to make the new bile acids that they lost in the poop and make it, and it lowers your cholesterol. Is this the best movie you have ever heard?
It's a good movement, I would say.
It's a good movement and movie.
And yes, and soluble fiber, chia seeds, if people want to know what soluble fiber is, if you just put a chia seed in water, it'll the gel kind of comes out of it, very good visual representation of that.
Right. That's a whole nother trend on social media that we have to watch out for also. Do you want me to tell you that? Chia seeds.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Overnight oats. So yeah, please tell me if I'm doing something catastrophic.
Okay, because Paul, overnight oats are beautiful. This is what's happening. Now there's crazy things on chia seeds where people are consuming chia seeds dry, right? Okay, Paul, you know where I'm going with this. Okay, and then taking fluid in, and the chia seed expands and can cause blockage. Like in esophagus.
Is that fiber maxing?
No, Matt. Bad Matt. Okay, so that is not unhealthy. But with the fiber maxing, with adding more fiber in your diet, and Americans are totally falling short of the amount of fiber in your diet. But you don't want to, all of a sudden add all this fiber to your diet because it could have social ramifications. Because it's not going to be absorbed. So when it gets down to the colon, your bacteria, it's still carbohydrates. Bacteria will say, party time, and start breaking that down, and you'll have a lot of gases, side effects. So you want to go slow and steady when you're adding fiber. You want to make sure you have enough fluid. And also, you need to move. When you walk, your GI tract moves. So you don't fiber max all craziness. You want to add a little at a time, maybe add some at breakfast, then see how you feel, then maybe breakfast and a little bit lunch, and slowly add it onto your diet.
Over the course of days to weeks, you mean?
Yes, if you feel comfortable doing this.
Do you have number targets that are recommended for men and women? Are they different?
Yeah, so it's about 25 to 30 grams of fiber a day, and we're coming in about 14 to 60. I mean, we're pathetic. I'll tell you why. The reason being is that we're not eating enough whole fruits and vegetables in our diet.
Right.
Nor are we love our grains, but we're not having whole grains. Mm. So that's where the problem is.
Okay. Paul, do we have another part to this case just to move ahead a little bit? I think we've covered a lot of really high yield stuff far.
I do want to ask, since we're still in fat territory and I'm not sure we're going to have a chance to go back there. I did want to, says as our resident TikTok apologist, I hear a lot of demonization of seed oils and sort of when you're talking about the good fats and the bad fats, I guess when a patient comes in, how do you talk about what is good, what is bad, and what is heart healthy and what is not?
Great. Thank you. Okay. All vegetable oils other than one is very healthy. So I don't care if it's soybean oil or safflower oil or, olive oil is not a seed, but canola oil, whatever. The only plant-based, let me just say, so these are high in unsaturated fat and low in saturated fat. So we want to be having them replacing saturated fat in your diet because we just said that saturated fat increases the LDL cholesterol. So we don't want to use beef tallow. No. We want to use vegetable oils. The only vegetable oil that is wicked high. Now, you know, I'm from Boston. So wicked high in saturated fat is coconut oil. No, like coconut oil is so high in saturated fat. So we want to, don't worry about that one. That's lovely. But don't have that in your diet to replace saturated fat, because it's actually adding more saturated fat than butter and beef cattle. So wow. Stick with canola oil, olive oil, soybean oil, which is inexpensive and wonderful. So vegetable oils coconut oil is the name of the game.
Yeah. And I listened to your episode about this. And one of the other things that you all talked about that I thought was interesting is like the heating of oils. If you're just using it one time, you're right. Cooking something, it's not a big deal.
Right.
The studies where if it's a fryer at a restaurant and they're reusing the oil over and over and over again, then that's where potentially the harmful stuff might come out from.
That's right. But you're not doing that at home. You're stir frying and cleaning, or the pan's going in the dishwasher, and that's the end of that. So don't even worry about it.
And the other thing I think that makes it's like the company it keeps type thing. Like, where are most people getting exposed to seed oils? Like, if they're not doing cooking at home, it's like they're getting it from processed foods. You know, they're not.
Okay, so let's go back to this. So again, whether it's processed foods have soybean oil or canola oil in it, that's not the problem in a lot of these processed foods. And let's also talk about that not all processed foods are unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when we get to the problem with ultra-processed food, and there's no definition for that, and I just read today that the FDA is slow in bringing that out, but there's things going on in some of the processed foods. Okay, let's go through this. Okay, baby carrots, they're processed. Fabulous. Okay, beans in a can, fabulous, right? You didn't have to soak them, you drain them, great soluble fiber, all right? Now, we get to soda, processed. Not exactly as healthy as beans. You see what I'm saying here?
I would say,
we have in this ultra-processed category, we have some really healthy foods and then not so healthy. So your sweetened beverages and your sweets and your treats. Obviously, you know that. But canned beans, because they're processed, fabulous. You know, so what has happened is people have said that everything that's processed is unhealthy, and that's not true, because there's a lot of processed foods that make your life easier and healthier. And baby carrots, they've been processed, cut down for you. I'd like to have that available to me so I can have it with hummus. You know something? I don't feel like peeling a big carrot, okay? You don't peel a big carrot, all right? So that's a processed food that's quite healthy. So we can't throw everybody under the bus.
And you don't want to make your own hummus, Joan, right?
No, I don't have time for my own hummus. I have to go to TJ Maxx, okay?
Paul, what else do we need to talk about here? Or does that satisfy your seed oil question?
I mean, it does. Yeah, I will say my beloved Impossible Whopper, just apropos of this, part of the way it is so delicious is liberal use of coconut oil. So that's one of the things that sort of makes it plant-based. So it's loaded with calories and still not substantially healthier. And Joan, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, than the regular old Whopper. So it's wonderful. It's plant-based, but it's also, apropos of our processed and fat conversation, probably not the best for you.
You know, Paul, I'm so glad you brought that up, because they'll say something like it's plant-based and then they throw on the coconut oil. And then if you did a comparison, you're like, wait a minute. Now, here's some good news. Any restaurant that has over 20 facilities in a chain, that nutrition information has to be up on their website. So the Burger King's, the McDonald's, anything, you know, Cava, Sweetgreens, whatever. All that nutrition information has to be up on the website. So it would be to your advantage, based upon your medical history, to go before you go and order it. Let me just shop online. You talk about shopping online, Paul, and see what is a better choice before I go to that restaurant. And some of them that sound healthy, man.
Let's move on to our. I think we have a husband for Bree, right? Kobe.
We do. We have Kobe. So stellar name. So Bree's husband, Kobe. is also curious about your thoughts on the paleo and carnivore diets, as some friends from his gym swear by them. So I'm not the paleo diet I've always been kind of foggy on, but for our audience and for me, could you describe or define what is a paleo diet? What is a carnivore diet? What does this mean to patients?
Sure. So the paleo diet is, you know, this is the basing on the eating habits of people gazillion years ago and you know, what was available. So what was available, you weren't going to get breakfast cereals a gazillion years ago, or whole wheat bread. So basically, it was ever you could find. So we're talking about plant-based, you know, fruits or vegetables and protein sources, okay? The carnivore diet is sort of taking that from that. And the carnivore diet is really strict, where it's only animal products. Ready for this? Animal products and some dairy products with it. So animal products and some dairy products. Do you know that we have documented cases of people on the carnivore diet that got scurvy?
Oh, I believe it.
I believe it too.
Okay. So I can explain scurvy to the audience here. Scurvy is a disease, a deficiency of vitamin C. I mean, who the heck gets scurvy? All you need to minimize scurvy, if you took a shot glass, a half a shot glass of orange juice, you would get enough vitamin C, which is 10 milligrams, to prevent scurvy. I mean, that's all it's taking. So these people are totally not eating any fruits or vegetables are getting scurvy. So this is the craziest thing in the whole wide world. And again, long-term health, not there.
I thought it was a joke when I first heard about it. And to have some empathy for people searching out a carnivore diet for various reasons. Like, I know some people just want to do it because they can have abs and it's just easy to control your calories in a way, like, because there's so few food choices. You're not overeating, you know, steak or whatever. But I think some people have food allergies or intolerance. And of course, when you cut out like 99% of foods, you're just by dumb luck going to hit the one that might have been causing you problems. But I think Our good friend, Paul, I don't know if you remember Dr. Iris Wang, she's a GI doctor, and even talking about FODMAP, which is like an evidence-based IBS thing that you can temporarily do, she's like, the reason it's temporary is because you don't want to start to select for like narrower and narrower gut bacteria. And this is kind of like what you were saying with fiber, Joan, where you have to ramp up your fiber intake. If you're only at 10 grams now and you want to get to 30, you have to slowly go up because your bacteria, your fiber have to change. And I think people can maybe change for the worse if they go to this carnivore diet. But I understand some of the reasons why people are doing it. I wish they wouldn't.
Right. Whenever you eliminate food groups, okay, so you need carbohydrates, protein, fat, and vitamins and minerals, and of course, water to survive, okay? Whenever you eliminate food groups like fruits and vegetables, you're not going to get vitamin C when just eating the protein group, okay? You're not going to get it. It's not there, okay? Yeah. You're not going to get fiber. So whenever you start doing that, of course, you will probably lose weight because you're restricting calories because you're not eating certain foods. But again, we're talking long-term health here, and you know, you need all those vitamins and minerals and nutrients. And if you're not going to eat them, I don't know what's going to happen here. I do know what's going to happen.
The Liver King. I mean, at least he was exposed as a scammer with his. He was taking like $10,000 worth of testosterone and growth hormone a month or whatever, not just eating liver like he at bull testicles or whatever he claimed he was eating. Okay. Well, the paleo one to me seems like it would be hard to follow because you're really not allowed to have even whole grains, which I believe are okay to have. But I think otherwise, do you have any issues with that? It doesn't sound like there's any like major gaps nutrient wise.
No, there is. I mean, if you're just going to have vegetables and protein sources, okay, so you may end up having a lot of protein sources, and depending upon what it is, be higher in saturated fat and cholesterol.
Oh, I see.
You're not going to get vitamins. Fruits and vegetables give you vitamins, but where's the fiber? I mean, you got fiber from that, but where's the whole grains?
Yeah.
There's a lot of B vitamins in the whole grains. And where's the dairy? Where's my vitamin D and calcium? calcium. Hello.
Oh, so they don't do dairy, and they don't do like nuts and seeds and
it's berries whatever and things. You, but it's out in the field, whatever you can find. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Very odd. I just can't make sense of it.
Paul, I also want to tell you that they in that paleo era, they lived to about 37. You know, I'm going beyond 37, honey. I am going beyond 37.
I'm already beyond 37, and I would like to keep going too, Joan. So I'm with you.
Matt, do you know the story?
Maybe I'll even come to on a TJ Maxx trip with you, Joan. I don't know. Actually, the nutrition course in Italy, that's where we should all be going. That's forget
right.
TJ Maxx.
That's right.
This episode is brought to you by Continuing Education Company. Hey, Curbsiders listeners. Have you ever been excited to attend a CME conference because of the great destination, only to be disappointed by the education once you got there? That's where Continuing Education Company really stands out. They host conferences in places clinicians genuinely want to visit, like Hawaii, Alaska, the Florida Keys, Kiowa Island, Nashville, and Austin, but they pair those destinations with education that actually delivers. Their meetings are structured as half-day morning sessions, so you get focused, practical learning without feeling overwhelmed. And because your afternoons are free, you have time to enjoy the destination and reflect on what you learned, which makes it far more likely to stick. That balance is why so many clinicians attend for the location the first time and then keep coming back for the education. There are still a few open registrations for the summer conferences, such as Palm Coast, Florida, near historic St. Augustine, so you should visit their website at www.cmemeeting.org to claim your spot. If you can't travel or have other plans, be sure to register for their live webcasts, which have the same great education but at your chosen location. For Curbsiders listeners, there is a special offer. Use promo code CURB30 for 30% off all live webcasts. Conference registrations are now open for the fall and winter, and the folks at CAC recommend booking now since discounted hotel room blocks tend to sell out. From now until June 30th, Continuing Education Company has a customer appreciation sale where all individual on-demand courses are on sale, up to 40%. Bundles and collections are also on sale, offering additional savings. There are a wide range of on-demand courses available for essential primary care topics, including diabetes, women's health, cardiometabolic syndrome, infectious disease, and many others. It's the same expert faculty and evidence-based content, just available whenever and wherever it fits your schedule. That's promo code CURB30 for 30% off all webcasts, and Thank You 40 for up to 40% off all online courses. The customer appreciation 40% off offer ends on June 30th. See for yourself why Continuing Education Company is considered a leading source for medical education. Visit cmemeeting.org/curbsiders to learn more. That's cmemeeting.org/curbsiders. Matt, do you know the word fun facts? I know Joan knows both of these. So the British soldiers were referred to as limeys because they would eat limes on ships to prevent scurvy.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
And then acid is literally derived from meaning without acid. Like that is the word derivation. So A being without and ascorbic. So without scurvy. So vitamin C, that's how it actually got its name.
Well, okay. So Bree wants to know what a balanced diet may look like. Especially one that still includes meat, because Kobe loves that. So we're going to talk to her about a balanced dietary pattern. But Joan, I want you to talk about like the food order thing, which I heard about also on your podcast. Right. Is that like, are lots of people following that? Or is that still kind of earlier science where it's interesting, but we need to look into it more?
This is fascinating. This is absolutely fascinating. So she's been doing this the research that I had on, she's been doing this for over 10 years. And it makes sense. This is what we know. That protein increases your satiety. So you want to have protein at every meal, okay? So you also want to have fruits and vegetables at every meal. Why? Because, or mostly vegetables at lunch and dinner. Why? Because vegetables are full of fiber and water, so they're going to fill you up before they fill you out. So we know from research from Penn State that this is with Barbara Rolls, is that having a salad, a lot of vegetables, lower fat dressing prior to a meal can reduce the calories at the meal by about 10%. That's pretty good. Okay. So by having a food order of vegetables first and then protein, right? It's going to fill you up. Protein is going to give, and that's satiety. So it may help you to reduce the calories at the meal. I wouldn't say eliminate the whole grains, but I think this order is very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. We also know now that when it comes to protein, you want to have protein spread out throughout the day. This is not how a lot of us have been raised. You know, we have a little breakfast, you know, maybe a lunch or whatever, and then we bank all our protein later on at night. We're eating in like a half a rotisserie chicken. So what we want to do is spread out that protein that we have some at breakfast, some at lunch, and some at dinner, and spread out the vegetables throughout the meal and the mm-hmm. fruits. So we want that combo. Because if you wait until dinner to get the recommended two and a half cups of vegetables and not have any during the day, you're not going to meet it. So let's spread it out. So this whole food order and this combo diet is pretty, pretty neat. And she's been doing research on this, and I hope people go to my Spot On podcast to listen to this episode. It's really, really yeah. fascinating. But it's a combination of using a combination of food to help outsmart your stomach.
The other thing that I would link to the food order thing that you talked about on the show was the, like on TikTok now, we have these people with continuous glucose monitors
yep.
eating things and seeing what it does to their yep. sugar, and food yes. order there can also affect like how high that, like if you eat the, you said on your show, your researcher said like vegetables, protein, if you're having that first and then you eat the potatoes at the end of the meal, your sugar goes up less than, and they right. gave, they, Paul, they like randomized people. Like it was like a crossover thing. Like the same people ate the same meal like 2 weeks apart, but they ate the starch first in one meal and then they ate the starch at the very end at the other meal. And there was a pretty drastic difference in the blood sugar spike. So I think it's at least worth, if you have diabetes and you check your finger stick or you wear a CGM, I think it's at least worth trying it out on yourself to see how much of a difference it makes.
Okay, let's look at what's going on with that. So when you have an empty stomach, okay, so you had lunch, and let's make believe you didn't eat anything all day long, and now it's dinner. Okay, so now what are we talking, 6-7 hours, right?
Yeah.
So we got an empty stomach on there. So if you have bread first, right, and there's nothing in the stomach, that bread is going to be starting to get broken down in the mouth and in the stomach and then go and leave the stomach early because there's nothing in the stomach, and then get absorbed in the small intestine. But if you go first with vegetables and protein source, and then now the stomach's full. Okay, mm-hmm. So now that bread is not going to be quickly leave the stomach to go to the right. small intestine to be absorbed. So it's an order, and how soon it leaves your stomach and goes into the small intestine and spike your blood glucose levels.
Yeah. And I think it's worth looking into, because some of the people are just getting like med, in the past, they were just getting thrown onto meds so much earlier. But now we're learning that even just, walking after meals can help control the blood sugar and this food order thing. And I think continuous glucose monitors are one of the ways that, I don't know, Paul, do you think this, you watch a lot of more of these continuous glucose monitor people, like I ate this, here's what my sugar did. Do you think they're on balance doing more like doing harm, or that they're actually giving some valuable info to people, Paul?
It never seems terribly helpful to me. Like it always it just doesn't. Seems sort of alarmist, and I ate and my blood sugars went up, and what do you think about that? Which is not, and that has fallen off my algorithm as I just sort of scrolled faster and faster when I see it come
okay.
up. So I'm not
so
sure what
not...
the current rhetoric is, but it has never seemed terribly useful to me.
I feel like if I was doing that, I could give some valuable information if I was talking people through it, but it's waiting for you.
Right. I mean, we know that, there's a difference between jelly beans and green beans. So if you have jelly beans, your blood sugars are going to spike up and green beans. But, people, you want to eat foods in a combination, which is going to affect that level of glucose. Mm-hmm. So you're not eating isolated foods. So, and these continuous glucose monitors are phenomenal for people with diabetes and pre-diabetes, which is a whole nother episode,
right?
Which is great. But for Joan Josephine on the street, I think, do you have really this? Don't get crazy about this. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. That's a good caveat that we're talking about people with, pre-diabetes, right. diabetes, right. if they that need to worry about that. Paul?
And I think that's my larger concern is you have someone without any, you know, impaired glucose tolerance who, and what does a spike even mean to them? Like it was 100 and it spiked all the way up to 108. Like you're like, well, what? I don't, in the absence of knowledge, you have the chance to alarm people in a way that is not helpful. So I think that's my, that's my larger concern.
This is why Paul is a great co-host. He points out like, you know, things that I miss. I love it.
You know why, Matt? He's grounded. Yeah. He's totally grounded.
I'm a man of the people. I'm always saying that.
Well, okay. So I think we've steered Bree and Kobe towards like more of a balanced diet, Mediterranean or DASH, where they're getting their 25 to 30 grams of fiber a day. They're spreading their protein out throughout the day. They're eating whole grains, beans, nuts, seeds. They're not freaking out about seed oils. What else did we cover? I think those are a lot of the high points, right, Paul?
Yeah. I do want to ask Joan about protein goals, which I think is also a hot topic too. So we're talking about spreading protein out, but I think I'm often asked, well, how much protein should I be eating? And it used to be like 0.8 to 1 gram per kilogram. And now it's, I think 7 grams per kilogram. I'm not sure what the current TikTok recommendation is, but
it's 7. Yes.
Yeah. So how, as a registered dietitian, how are you counseling patients, recognizing it may vary depending on what your individual needs are, but in general, what should protein targets be for patients and how should they achieve them?
Okay. We've gone crazy with protein. For some reason, we made it a halo nutrient.
Yeah.
And really, there are some categories of people that need more and not getting enough. And those will fall in maybe people that have food insecurity, maybe older people who have issues with consuming enough calories. I do something in my class at Boston University because we do, when we talk about protein and we talk about what the needs are. So I make them calculate, you know, based on their body weight, you know, how much protein you need. And so if you're a 150-pound woman and you're going, you know, if you're having a gram of protein, the what historically was is 0.8, so this is even a little bit higher. We're talking 68 grams of protein a day. So they're wowed with that. Oh my gosh, how am I going to do that? Then what I do is make them go through a well-balanced 1600 calorie diet. And a well-balanced 1600 calorie diet will give you 80 grams of protein. Now, 1600 calories is a weight-reducing diet.
Right.
Okay? So if you're maintaining your weight, all right, and especially if you're a young adult, we're talking more than 2,500 calories a day. You're meeting your protein needs unless you're doing broccoli and rice, okay? And then, you know, but if you're eating a well-balanced food, you're going to get this. So what has happened with protein? We have made protein this halo food, and now we've kind of lost our way. And I'll tell you, Matt and Paul, if I see toothpaste being fortified with protein, I am going to just throw in my hat in the ring, okay? I can't stand it anymore.
I think, Paul, did I send you the protein donuts, protein ice cream, like these kind of things? Yeah,
I'm very excited about the protein Pop-Tarts, I'll be honest with you. Like, this seems like a great way to...
So this is what's happening. So people are just crazy about this. So what you want to remember with protein, it's well-balanced diet, spread it out throughout the day. So make sure that you get that satiety feeling. We know that your muscle mass you're synthesizing muscle mass throughout the day. So we want protein to be throughout the day. Don't bank it all at night. And we do not need to be going out and getting Pop-Tarts or whatever, donuts with protein when you can get enough from your diet. Now, when you start going crazy with protein, there's just so much real estate on that plate. So if you're going to do a side of beef or a rotisserie chicken on the plate, there's going to be less room on the plate for other nutritious foods, which are the vegetables and the whole grains and the dairy. So let's not go cuckoo over that. I mean, this is absolutely gone crazy.
Yeah, the research, it seems like everyone I've heard that knows about this field says like Americans might be getting like 1.2 grams per kilogram of protein, which is more than the RDA, what the old RDA was 0.8. And then For people that are like bodybuilders or professional athletes who want to push it a little more, you know, they can do that. But though I've seen like 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram per day. But most people are getting it. I would say if people are on like vegan, vegetarian diets and people come in and ask me about it, I say, well, let's get one of the apps that tracks your calories We can see what your macros are over the course of the next week or two and see if it's really a problem. And then that can get just like objectively prove to people whether or not they're getting enough.
Right.
These apps, if doctors, Paul, have you ever used any of these apps for calorie tracking?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I think MapMyRun or MyFitnessPal, I think not that we're showing brand preference, but those both, I think, will count macros, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Matt, I want something you said was so spot on that these athletes need more. Of course they need more because they're athletic and they're doing things, whether it's weight training or running or whatever. But guess what? Do you know how many calories they need to eat a day to fuel that level of activity? So they're coming in like 3,000 calories a day.
Right.
I mean, so the protein is going to be there. So we don't need to be looking for fortified foods, fortified with protein, when we know that if we just ate food, natural food from Mother Nature, we would meet our needs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You said beforehand we might need to do two episodes. I can feel I'm resisting taking us down other lanes just to say, you mentioned older adults. I have a lot of patients in their 70s, 80s.
Yes.
Appetite starts to wane. Those people I do worry about. And then also I've heard that especially if these people have not been training for decades and decades and they're less active, their muscle might be less responsive. So they might even want to push it a little higher. Is that what you would tell people?
Okay. So now we're going into the people that need it. Okay. So the people that may need it, we want to prevent sarcopenia. Okay. But we want to prevent that later up in older adults. This is the problem. Mother Nature is not nice. As you get older, your metabolism decreases, okay? You lose muscle mass and you don't need as many calories. So you need less calories as you get older, but you may need more protein and other nutrients. You need more calcium. So that's where you need to be making sure that your diet is very nutrient dense to meet those needs. So very important for older people to be spreading out that protein throughout the day. They need to also be doing weight-resistant exercise, and they need to meet with someone who is an expert in that so they don't do anything that's going to harm themselves. So whether it's at the Y or a physical therapist, who I love, you know, so that they are understanding to eat more healthy, spread out the protein, get a healthy diet, but do weight-resistant exercise because that's going to help you with increasing lean muscle mass.
Yeah, our recent guest, Dr. Ekstrom Paul, remember she told us that in retirement, people's full-time job should be to stay active, do physical activity. She's a big fan of Tai Chi. And anyway, we're picking up what you're putting down. Our audience knows to, I think you can't give up on people when they have chronic illness or when they're getting older. Those people can do physical activity. It might be modified, but I think the scope of what we expect people to do gets narrower, like more and more narrow over time. And I think we're doing a disservice to people. So I really try to push. Like Paul's going to be one of these 80-year-old marathon guys.
Early colorectal cancer doesn't get me first, but we'll see.
You know, Matt, that's interesting because we have a tsunami of baby boomers. And these baby boomers want to live longer and better than the generation before them. So they are very much attuned to what is going to get me to keep me out of the nursing home.
Yeah.
You know, and so we know that, you know, 65 and over age group is increasing, but what's increasing is 85 and over. Mm-hmm. And we want to keep those people in their own homes, they can go shopping, do gardening and everything. So we want to make sure that their diet is healthy, that they're doing the type of exercise that it doesn't cause injury, and are maintaining a healthy and happy lifestyle later in life. So.
All right, Joan, we're coming up on our time here, but we have a million questions for you. But selfishly, I have a couple I want to ask about. So I'd like to hear your take on plant-based diets. I know you like sort of a plant-forward approach, but what is your spiel for patients who are vegetarians or vegans? I'll stop there.
Okay. So all healthy diets, Mediterranean diet, DASH diet, it's all plant forward. So a lot of plants, that's what makes them healthy. If you're going to be a vegetarian, that could be work. Wonderful for you, but you got to be a healthy vegetarian. If you're going to be a vegetarian and get rid of animal products other than dairy products, and your dairy products are full fat dairy, high in saturated fat, that may not be as so healthy. If you're going to go vegan, where no animal products, then we got to make sure that you're meeting your nutrient needs. So vitamin B12 is only found in animal products. So if you're not going to get animal products and a good source of B12, you got to make sure that you are consuming it elsewhere in the diet. So you got to look for foods that are fortified. Really probably need a vitamin supplement, soy, which may be fortified with B12, but you got to meet that need. The other thing you have to make sure, if you're not doing dairy, where's your vitamin D and where's your calcium coming in here? Okay, very important for bone health throughout your whole life. So again, the soy, make sure that it's fortified with those nutrients. I always recommend that if you want to be a vegan, to sit down with a registered dietitian nutritionist to plan it out, because I don't want you to miss out on nutrients because it can have long-term effects. So, you know, you can be a vegan, but you can be an unhealthy vegan if you're missing out on nutrients.
Right. Yeah. We had a guest who said, you know, a Coca-Cola and peanut M&Ms, that's vegan, but you know, she wouldn't recommend it as a staple in your diet. You mentioned the full fat versus low fat dairy.
Yes.
I know low fat dairy, of course, like in the 90s, 2000s, when we were on the like low fat, you know, anything that's fat free is automatically amazing, or low fat is amazing, pump it with sugar, who cares? But the full fat dairy, I've seen some research that like maybe people manage their weight better with full fat dairy. If people are just eating it like one serving a week or a couple servings a week, is that a big deal? What do you think there?
The full-fat dairy research is mixed. Some show that it doesn't have a negative effect on your cholesterol or your weight. Okay, here's the story. Over 70% of Americans are overweight. 40% are in the obese category.
Yeah, okay.
So calories count, okay?
I got you.
So if you're going to have whole milk at 150 calories, all right, and it's going to have 8 grams of saturated fat, and skim milk is going to be 80 calories, so I cut it almost in half, no saturated fat, but the calcium and the vitamin D is the same. So here I go shopping again. I get the same calcium and vitamin D at less calories. This is like a sale at TJ Maxx for me, okay? So that's an issue. So, you know, if you want to have whole fat dairy, that's fine. You just want to keep your saturated fat to less than 10% of the total calories. But if you have full fat dairy and fatty meats and butter, it's going to be hard to meet that goal.
All right. Again, resisting food pyramid talk.
yeah, please.
You egg yolks. What about egg yolks? The egg yolk. There's a lot. I mean, it's good stuff you're throwing away, I think. But tell me I can eat my egg yolks.
No, egg yolks are fine. Actually, the good source of choline, which is a nutrient a lot of Americans are not getting enough of. Egg yolks are absolutely fine. And listen, you know, the price of eggs, is this crazy? I mean, this is absolutely great. Let's not throw anything.
And that's
You're like, hello, eat that whole egg, but make sure you cook it. So I wouldn't worry too much about whole eggs.
Okay. I like the comment about dairy, though. You know, the full fat dairy, it's a good way to cut calories. So I hadn't thought of it from that perspective as well. So, all right, Paul, what else is on our list here? We're kind of in our lightning round.
Yeah, we'll avoid the raw versus pasteurized conversation. But what about, and I feel like I've not heard as much about the intermittent fasting with the advent of GLP-1s and the tirzepatides of the world, but still it's something that patients will ask about. So what is your take on intermittent fasting? So things like alternate day eating or time-restricted feeding, as it's sometimes known as.
Okay, so I'm going to give my age away. So when I was in graduate school at Boston University getting my master's in 1984, okay, I muzzled that, okay? So what I did my thesis on was, ready for this? The effect of the time of day that food is consumed and its relationship to weight loss. I have it. I can show you the bound copy. There wasn't a lot out there now, but we know more now. This is really fascinating. Okay. So your metabolism, your body works in with circadian rhythms, and that's the 24-hour cycle of your body. What we know now, and more emerging research is coming out, is your metabolism is different. It's more robust earlier in the day and less so later in the day. So it would be beneficial on multiple levels if you ate more of your calories and tapered earlier in the day and tapering it down. Americans typically eat like a triangle, the opposite. So as their calories increase as the day goes on, so what happens is they don't eat much for breakfast or some lunch, and then they're banking all the calories from 4 p.m. until they're watching Jimmy Kimmel. So what happens is we know now that when you have all those calories later at night, it's going to be more likely to be fat storage. Also, let's face it, when you're watching Jimmy Kimmel, you're not eating oatmeal with berries. Okay, so it's also the type of foods that you're eating. So what we know now, I really welcome that people start eating a better breakfast, lunch, and having more of a supper than a big dinner, and cut out the late night eating. And that's going to go a long way with A, improving the diet quality, because you'll have healthier foods during the day typically, and also cut back on that late night eating and those calories. And that can be a better way to manage your weight.
Yeah. So with the fasting, what I know a lot of people do is they're either going to cut out breakfast and start eating at lunch, or they're just going to stop eating earlier in the day. It's hard socially to stop eating at 4 p.m. or 5 p.m., but that's what I think, those are the two choices. But I think a lot more people skip breakfast, so they're kind of doing the opposite of what you just said.
Right. And you know, Matt, when you limit your eating episodes, you're limiting the foods you eat and therefore the nutrients you can get. Okay, so let's talk about breakfast foods. Let's talk about breakfast foods. Okay, you always judge a person by the people they hang out with. Okay, so you have a whole grain cereal in the morning that hangs out with milk and berries. I mean, those are good friends. And that makes that meal really, really healthy. When you skip that and only maybe eat lunch, then you're eating half a rotisserie chicken or some whatever. And so you're displacing this variety, which is going to do a better job of increasing your nutrient needs throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. All right, Paul, what's next?
All right. I think my last question. So I practice in the middle of Pennsylvania, and I've made the joke before. If I could snap my fingers and make Turkey Hill iced tea disappear, I would cure diabetes in about half my patients and also probably the obesity epidemic. So, and I will have patients often say to me, listen, I know that diet sodas are just as bad as the regular. And I never quite know how to respond with force for that or not. Like, I don't think so, but I also, like, I just don't feel confident enough. Tell me your take on non-nutritive sweeteners versus the standard issue corn syrup.
Okay, we know through our studies that non-nutritive sweeteners are safe. Yeah, unless you just, that's all you're eating, packets of these. Okay, but they're safe. And they are way better than full sweetened beverages, for sure. I mean, like, we all know that. I mean, you know, a diet that's high in added sugars can increase your risk of not only diabetes, but also of heart disease. So this is an alternative that would allow people to have a beverage that doesn't have the added sugar. We know that there's about 27 million Americans that have diabetes. That's nothing. 104 million have pre-diabetes. That means they're on deck to get diabetes if they don't do something in the next 5 years. So we don't want people drinking sweetened beverages, and this is an alternative. Now, if you don't want to use them, you don't have to use that. Go take, you know, water, sparkling water. They have so much now. Put lemons and limes in it and just drink it. But there's nothing unsafe about this for what we know on a moderate level, and it does displace sweetened beverage, which, you know, in excess could be a problem.
Yeah, I was trying to look into this a little bit. I saw the UpToDate is one of the sources sometimes we look through, and they had a whole article on this. One of the things they were saying, like, there's a concern about dysbiosis, you know, that's going to mess with your microbiome. And then, of course, the microbiome is a real thing that's linked to tons of different poor health outcomes. But, you know, so it's an area where I kind of watch it. I'm not exposed to too many non-nutritive sweeteners because I'm eating mostly like real foods and just water. So it's not a huge deal for me, but I think like, some of the processed foods, that's mostly where people are encountering these. And, you already told us some processed foods are okay. Not all processed foods are created equal for sure.
Right. And you know, the microbiome is a whole nother episode, but you know, if you're having a diet that's really unhealthy and a lot of sweets and treats, what do you think that's doing for the microbiome?
Yes. It's not selecting for the greatest garden of microbes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Joan, this has been so much fun. Paul and I are going to enroll in this. Can we still enroll in the June's nutrition course?
All right. Email me and I'll try to get you in. Okay.
I think we know who's the smartest person on this call is the one that has figured out a way to teach a course in nutrition in Italy every June. How long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing this for about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. It's the best. It's the best. I have to tell you, can I just say a funny story? So here I am, like crazy person, talking about my hands Italian. I'm 110% Italian. And in Italy, they have these wonderful cafes at every corner.
Sure.
And you go there and your neighbor goes there and you have coffee in the morning. You talk to your neighbor. You talk to your neighbor. You believe this? You talk to your neighbor. It's just lovely. So the first couple of days that I was in Italy, the first year I was there, I walked into this lovely little cafe and I said, cappuccino, go. Let's go. And this woman was like, who the heck is cappuccino, go? No cappuccino to go in Italy. They sit down like normal people and have cappuccino and they talk. It took me 3 days to come down from this U.S. crazy rate of where I was and come down. And that's why you need to be in Italy a month, because you realize you really are really cuckoo.
Yes.
That's what you're going to find out. You're cuckoo.
My family went for 2 weeks a couple years ago. It was fantastic. I definitely want to go back. So
you have to. Yes. Month. You got to do a month.
Yeah. Maybe I'll bring Paul this time. Paul's family.
You could do this podcast from Italy.
Paul, there's got to be a podcasting conference in Italy that we could get invited to.
I'm sure. Yeah. I have to figure out how to deal with the cat. So if we can bring him along as an emotional support animal.
Well, let me tell you, Italians love their animals. Love their animals. So bring the cat.
All right. Joan, we've enjoyed talking to you. First, if you want to just give the audience like one or two things that you really want them to remember from this, and then we'll give you a chance to promote anything that you want to, any place you want to direct the audience.
Great. All I want to say, I repeat what I said in the beginning, that science, nutrition is a science. It's not an opinion. So on social media, people have an opinion about this, but it's based on science. So don't ever, you know, you should really be talking to a registered dietitian nutritionist. You can find one at eatright.org in your area to look at your diet, your health, and how to make that work. And then I hope that if you want the latest nutrition information, that is exactly why I started Spot On. And it's a podcast that's on all major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, whatever. So, you know, you are what you eat.
This has been another episode of The Curbsiders, bringing you a little knowledge food for your brain hole.
Yummy!
Great, yeah.
Had to do it for this
is food based. I feel like this is the right time for that. Are you still hungry for more? Join our Patreon and get all of our episodes ad free, plus twice monthly bonus episodes at patreon.com/curbsiders. You can find our show notes at thecurbsiders.com and sign up for our mailing list to get our weekly show notes in your inbox. This includes our Curbsiders Digest, which recaps the latest practice changing articles, guidelines, and news in internal medicine.
And we're committed to high value practice changing knowledge. And to do that, we need your feedback. So email us at askcurbsiders@gmail.com. A reminder that this and most episodes are available for CME credit for all health professionals through VCU Health at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. And if you want to get CME through our Patreon with quarterly bundles, then you can do that too at patreon.com/curbsiders. Special thanks to our writer and producer for this episode, Dr. Edison Eddie Jang. And to our whole Curbsiders team, our technical production is done by Podpaste. Elizabeth Proto does our social media. Jen Watto runs our Patreon. Chris the Chew Man Chew moderates our Discord. Stuart Brigham composed our theme music. And with all that, until next time, I've been Dr. Matthew Frank Watto.
And as always, I remain Dr. Paul Nelson Williams. Thank you and goodbye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.